Hello and welcome to the Tea on Sustainable Living podcast, where your hosts,
Hannah
and Brandy, try and help each other navigate the big messy gray area of giving a shit about the planet, and hopefully helping you along the way.
Each episode, we have honest chats about our sustainability fails, sometimes amongst ourselves and sometimes with guests, while also leaving you with a little sprinkle of hope and inspiration to keep on giving a shit.
So, go make yourself a cup of tea, get comfy, and let's dive into the episode. Hello, Give a Shitters. This is Brandy.
And this is Hannah.
And you are listening to episode number 13 of the Tea on Sustainable Living podcast.
Welcome to episode number 13.
Yes, welcome.
What are we talking about today, Brandy?
Well, we are going to attempt to talk about the intersectionality of like climate change and social justice, and we've touched on it in the past in like small ways, I feel like, but this is just in general a topic that I don't feel like I really know enough about or know it well enough to like talk about, like an overview and like a bird's eye view. Like I know like specifics about, you know, like materials for iPhones, like how, where they're mined, like that doesn't, the people who live there, it's not great. So specific things like that, but I just feel like it's such a complex issue and such a nuanced issue that, yeah, I don't know much about, and I've known I don't know much about it for a while.
So I guess welcome to a potentially uninformed chat about intersectionality and climate change,
climate justice,
etc.
Etc.
Are you drinking tea? Because I'm not drinking tea. It's too hot for tea.
I am drinking tea.
It's like 32 degrees, Brandy.
I know, but I let it get a lot cooler than I normally would.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's
like lukewarm nettle tea, which is from a past episode. I'm not drinking the tea that I'm about to tell you about because I finally was able to find it. Yeah, I got nettle tea.
How is it?
Tastes like green tea.
Okay.
Bit earthy, and it looks like green tea, and I don't know enough about tea and the flavors to get more specific than that. It's like wine. I know enough to know whether I'm drinking red or white, and beyond that.
Well, at really least you're easy.
Yes. I like it. I think, I would buy it again. Have a bit to go through before it runs out. But yeah, I'm drinking it. I also managed to find oolong tea, which is from another past episode, but I haven't tried that yet. So maybe I'll try that next episode and just get this all backwards, but I'll catch up eventually.
Yeah.
So yes, we've already covered nettle tea. The tea before we spill the tea, let's talk about the actual tea that for this week's episode, we haven't covered white tea yet. Which
is that a thing?
It is a thing, as we I discovered in a previous episode that
did we? That, I forgot it already.
Well, hold on. No, wait a minute. That the tea is like black tea, green tea, white tea, I forget what else, are all from the same plant, the Senna something.
We're getting detailed today.
Yeah, listeners. Very detailed. We'll link it in the show notes. That it's all about the process and something with oxidization. So white tea is like basically the least processed, the least messed with. And I found this really cool, not really a project, but organization in Nepal called Partnership for Sustainable Development, or PSD for short. And I'll just read this little blurb from their website. PSD builds capacity in the poorest and most vulnerable communities in Nepal, notably amongst children, women, orphans, those with disabilities, and in rural communities. Functioning as an intermediary organization between the haves and the have-nots, PSD serves to link Nepal with international grants, donors, and fundraising projects. PSD is a non-governmental social development organization. Right. And one of their goals from their website, there were several, but the one jumped out at me was environment to resource civil society and the youth of Nepal in particular regarding their ability to influence the environment around them by promoting sustainable, responsible, and economically viable environmental projects, including startup social enterprises. So I thought this tied in very well with the conversation we're going to attempt to have today. The website we'll link in the show notes is psdnepal.org. You can read more about it. And I found some other cool things happening in Nepal, so we'll link them as well. And yeah, I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I mean, I think anything that gives people power and helps them gain the skills that they need is, yeah,
pretty awesome. Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've heard in relation to this, in regards to the topic of like intersectionality and climate justice, social justice, all of this, is that one of the ways to combat like climate change is by like educating women, specifically educating girls.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember where I've heard that. But just that the more you educate girls, then the more, I don't remember what the tie is, but it's a thing.
Yeah, it is an interesting, I've heard that as well. Like the more, like focusing on female education, women's education in general,
mm-hmm.
somehow, I guess, I mean, it's a complex issue, right? Because then you're going into like social dynamics. Like, what is it about women having education that means they're more likely to bring that back into their communities? Mm-hmm. Or is it that they're more likely to be involved in some of the community projects?
Well, yes, by educating them, they're not like stuck at home doing, you know, like domestic things, and depending on where in the world, you know, spending half their day going to get somewhat clean water.
Yeah, interesting.
So yeah, this is an element of the conversation that I am not qualified enough to talk about. I just know it's a thing. I've heard it. I'm glad you've heard it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's that general thing, right? I mean, just that is like touching on, you know, the more equal societies are, whether that's to do with gender equality or wealth equality or like racial equality, the more kind of sustainable those societies are, like in a general sense, you know, the bigger you inequality you have, you know, the more people you have living in difficult situations or without the opportunity to bring people who would make a big change, you know, they don't have access to the jobs or the money or whatever it is, the resources to make those changes, you know. And like, I don't know so much about that in terms of sustainable, like environmental stuff, but I know, you know, in terms of like poverty, like how the inequality between the richest and the poorest is like a very high indicator of like, yeah, I mean, it just creates more and more poverty. Also not very well articulated.
No, I get what you're getting at. I feel like, yeah, the more equal groups of people feel in a society, then yeah, it's more sustainable because everyone's
mm-hmm.
happier, the more kind of if they have equal access to things, equal opportunities, equal treatments.
Yeah. I mean, there's like crazy stuff about, this is again, not really, this is related to health. I was reading about studies which show, so if you take like two communities which have very similar profiles in terms of access to education, access to healthcare, income, but one community is more like, it feels more involved, that they feel more empowered, they have better health outcomes. Like there is a noticeable, I will find the study, it's in the book, I think it's in Health at Every Size, it references this study, but it talks about how, you know, like things like diabetes and heart disease, they're reduced, I don't know if I can say solely, but related in some way, related to like feelings of empowerment, feelings of involvement in the community.
Interesting.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, the mind's a powerful thing. And yeah, something like feeling involved, feeling like you're contributing to.
Feeling like you have power.
Yeah, like you have power. Making an impact on your local community or on a broader scale. To fulfill that, I think a human need to like kind of contribute, to do something, then the more fulfilled you'll feel. And absolutely, I can see how that ties into, well, lower stress, which is very highly linked to your physical well-being, the amount of stress you have. So yeah, that's really interesting. That I like that's what they got out of that study. Yeah,
it's really interesting.
Yeah,
I was gonna ask, this is going way off topic, I was like, you said it was like a human need to feel involved. mm-hmm. or to contribute. Do you think that's true? Do you think that's something that humans need?
I think it's something humans need to, I don't know, like live their best life, like to get the most out of life. It's what can you do for others? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, this is off topic, but yeah, to feel, you know, people treat like happiness as like the destination when mm-hmm. who is it that I've heard? I think multiple people I've heard talk about this, that that shouldn't be the destination. It's just like happiness tends to be a byproduct of living like a meaningful life. And what adds meaning? Well, helping others or contributing to something other than yourself.
Yeah. I had a lecturer who was always like, so I studied theology. So very much like all this stuff about like belief and how to live a good life, or not necessarily how to live, but like what gives people meaning. And he would always just be like, humans are meaning making machines. Like everything mm-hmm. we do, we're like looking for ways to give it meaning, you know, whether that's through religion or volunteering or like an event that happens in your life. We're always, it's never going to be something that remains neutral. It's something that we always, you know, in some way we give it meaning in relation to our life.
Yeah. Otherwise I feel like if we don't, then it just feels like we're wasting our, I don't know, limited moments. If there's no meaning, then like, what are we doing with our time?
Yeah. And I think maybe this is something that's really hard in relation to issues like climate change, because I think that's when it's something that's so big. And if you start connecting all the dots, it like, you're just like, oh my goodness, there's so much here and I can never do enough. And it removes the meaning from what you're doing. You know, you're like, I can't have a meaningful impact. And then it's like, well, what's the point then?
But you can. You can have a meaningful impact. It's all about how you look at it. Yeah, if you look at,
right,
exactly. Okay, I am personally responsible for keeping the temperature change under 2 degrees Celsius. Okay, no, like, it's, everyone has a role to play in that scenario. But if you, you know, zoom in a bit and look at, I don't know, how you can contribute less and just really start small and not, yeah, put too much pressure on the individual to make the change, because with all of the, you know, big, massive money hungry companies, just wanting mm-hmm. to make more money and, you know, disregard the impact they have. Yeah, you can vote with your dollar, but yeah. Mm. Policy and, well, change is another way to approach it. So yeah, it's all how you view it. If you look at the final result.
But then, you know, then we come back to this point of the individual versus systemic change, because if we don't engage in some way with systemic change, like, I mean, systemic change is the most impactful because mm-hmm. it impacts a much wider range of people.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem is, well, I mean, I know I typed out the outline, is the word versus, individual versus systemic change, as if mm-hmm. it's one or the other. It's both. And starting small, starting in your, what changes you can make in your own life is an easy entry point. And then I feel like from there, I don't know, it's almost like, for me, it feels like almost like stepping stones. Okay, I made all these small changes in my life, what I eat, how I shop, etc. Now I need to advocate more and do more to help
mm-hmm.
help make these systemic changes.
What feels like a block for you to do that?
I think it's the knowledge piece.
Okay.
And yeah, like I said in the beginning, like I mean, it's like starting anything relatively new. Like you feel like you need to know. Or maybe this doesn't apply to everyone. Like, I feel like I need to know all the things before I start.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I know on a practical level that, okay, just start and then figure it out as you go is the best way to actually get anything done.
Right.
Because then I get stuck in the knowledge piece and okay, now I need to know all of these things and I don't know all of these things. And it's overwhelming to know all these things.
Yeah.
Which yeah, I guess is ultimately why I wanted to have this chat today.
What do you think about, sorry, did you want to add something else?
I think I was probably just going to say the same thing with different words.
Okay. I was going to say, like, as you're talking, I'm agreeing and not, because I'm probably more of a, you know, different personalities, right? Like, but it's like that thing of, I mean, I guess maybe that's the role of some NGOs and charities, that they are doing that research for you. Mm. So if they recommend a campaign or if they lead something, you know, is it enough to just engage with that? Taking it more from, you know, a point of view of like, okay, so I can't know all of this, but maybe I can trust that Fair Trade or Greenpeace or, I don't know, my mind has gone completely blank of all these charities that exist, you know. But anyway, that they've done that research, they have people working on that, you know. Mm-hmm. Or does that just feel, but then does that feel like too far removed, you know, if you just like sign a petition or you turn up to an event? Like, does that also, in some way, it's like, it removes the need to do the research, but then you're also not as engaged because you haven't done the research. Or
interesting. Yeah. And yeah, a couple of thoughts when you said, you know, is that enough to trust these companies to do the research for you? I think only you, Hannah, can answer that, and you, the listener, can answer that for yourself. Does that feel enough for you, or do you want to do the do some research to like see the connections, to see what this, you know, charity A or organization B is doing, for you to kind of see, oh, okay, all right, oh, okay, now I see why they're doing that. Oh, okay, that helps this group of people by doing this. Okay, yeah, okay, I feel good about that. So I feel like that's an individual question, but I guess I was more kind of talking about it in terms of this idea of, not the idea of, how climate justice is social justice, and the intersectionality of it all is just one big massive topic. And I know some things, like on a small scale level, about, yeah, I think I mentioned, you know, mining the precious metals for iPhones or dyes for clothing. Like, I know that, or animal factory farms, the impact that those things can have on the surrounding environments. But like on a bigger scale, there's like so much at play. And I think what I need to do is figure out, yeah, how much research am I willing to like let other people do for me? So maybe it's research on like organizations who I can support. Maybe it's doing a small like recurring monthly donation. Currently I do Charity Water and Go Climate. They were Go Climate Neutral, but now I think they dropped the neutral to be more than neutral, to be positive or negative, or to have less of an impact, to offset even more. So yeah, maybe it's finding an organization that doing just enough research to feel good about supporting. And then
I think there's an element here as well of like, as a, again, as a bigger question, which maybe is also something you just have to answer on an individual level, but is it worth that thing? Is it better to be a sort of jack of all trades, like jack of all climate knowledge, and like know a bit of this, that, and the other? Or like, do you really like want to, like, you know, something is really interesting to you and you sort of like hone in, and that's the thing that you like give all your time to, because, you know, we have limited time, money, resources. You can never do everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that is also an individual thing. A question that you listener have to decide for yourself. But to spin it, like, if you're trying to be a jack of all, how did you say it? A jack of all climate knowledge or something. Then maybe your thing is educating. Maybe it's but not even in a formal way. Maybe it's just being that go-to person that your network of people, friends, family, whoever, they know that you know a little bit about all the things, so they can come to you with their questions to as like a sounding board or a jumping off point for them to get more into something. So that, I think, in itself could be, is like a specific, or I don't know, a thing to go all in on. For me, I don't know, what is my thing? I mean, I mentioned Charity Water. I got really into that for a long time. And I think I've reached the point where I read Scott Harrison, the founder, I read his book. I went to like a live event, did like fundraisers for birthdays and I should do that again, actually. But I spent enough, I feel like I've spent enough time in it that I'm like, yeah, you just take a little bit of my money every month forever, pretty much.
Right.
His goal is to make sure everyone in the world has access to clean water, which is a lofty goal, but they are doing very good things. So I've reached a point with them where like, I feel good about just the not set it and forget it.
But well, I mean, maybe a little bit. Sometimes that is what's needed. You're like, okay, I can trust this. I've got, you know, in this case, like the financial resources or time resources or however you want to, you know, support an organization. And I'm like, okay, I do that like monthly event or I have a monthly donation and that's, you know.
Yeah.
And for maybe that's fine. Set it and forget it. why not? I mean.
Yeah. And for the topic of water like that, to bring it back to the attempted topic of today's episode, I don't know what we'll end up with or what the title will be. We'll see. that the closer we get to that, you know, our 2-degree limit and the, you know, more extreme weather conditions, more droughts, fewer people have access to water, fewer have access to clean water. And it ties into like, it's a feminist issue because who are the ones who are, you know, trekking the hours and hours a day to get said water, whether it's clean or just too dirty for human consumption. Yeah, that's the only option. It's women and young girls who should be in school. And like we said before, to bring it back, I want to find a study or articles better, like research for this to resources to refer you to listener to know what we're talking about. But yeah, the more you educate young women, the better impact it has on, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
the planet.
Just in general, education is such a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
End of statement.
Yes. Full stop.
Education is important for everyone.
Education is important. I mean, and people are important in general. We touched on this in the first episode that I think it was the Fair Trade one, actually, that I think the organization featured in that episode was, yeah, about putting people before profit. I can't remember. Because when we talk about, you know, doing better for the planet, but what that really means is doing better for the people on this planet.
Right.
Because if you put the people first, then the like I feel like the planet will benefit from that. So go ahead.
I don't know. I think there's a part of that which is about, and I'm kind of conflicted in my mind, or not conflicted, but it's difficult to balance between that care for an individual because all humans are individuals, and then like care for the collective group of humans. So I was thinking about like climate justice, for example, if you're shutting down coal-powered energy stations. So you could argue we should just like shut that down. I mean, this is like a very unnuanced argument, but say we're like shutting this down is a good thing. You know, there's one argument that's like, oh, we should just shut it down as soon as possible. And that's the best thing for like the collective humanity.
But like sacrificing one for the good of the
many. Right. You know, exactly. But on an individual level, you know, you've got all these people who are working or, you know, their livelihoods depend on this. You know, what is a way, you know, to have like climate justice for everyone? So how do you like upskill the workers or give people enough notice time that things close down, or, you know, like support for the people who are affected by those changes that need to happen, but also imply some suffering on the short term. So yeah, like this, that philosophy thing, like do you know
we're getting a 10-minute warning, so.
Sorry,
okay. Whoa. 10 minutes. All right, cool, let's wrap up this topic.
10 minutes to answer this philosophical question. Go, Brandy.
No, that is a tough one. I saw you mentioned that and or added that to that line. I feel like, you know, an easy or an immediate and probably ignorant response is, oh, just turn it into, I don't know, a plant that makes solar panels or whatever, insert whatever other sustainable business. But then, yeah, you have to, it's not a snap of the fingers. You have to actually make that transition for the people and the plant itself. And is that even possible? Is it worth time and money. And I don't know what the answer is. It's like, I think this similar question has been brought up to me before of, well, what about just closing the factory farms? What about the people who work there? I don't know. I don't think I'm educated enough or knowledgeable enough to answer mm-hmm. that. I just know that it is having these things, factory farms, coal plants have a negative impact on the people who work there and for the environment and the people yeah. who live around these plants. So I know enough to know that it's bad. I don't know enough to know what the best alternative is and how to get there in a way that is best for everyone involved.
Right. Yeah. That's a big one.
It is a big one. Before we started, I did find this article that just to clarify for those who are maybe struggling to make the connection. And I feel like this is a good kind of overall definition when, you know, we're talking about climate justice and how climate justice is social justice. So just to define it, and we'll leave this link, it's just gvi.ie is the website, mm-hmm. which what's IE, Ireland? Anyway, found this article, climate justice can be defined as the fair treatment of all people and the freedom from discrimination in the creation of policies and projects that address climate change, as well as the systems that create climate change and perpetuate discrimination. Okay. So it's not only what is the systems that are currently in place that are causing harm on people on the planet. It's tied into whatever we come up with now to treat things. So new policies, new projects, and keeping everyone in mind, not just
yeah,
you know, bottom line. If you're one of those big money hungry companies, or it's
mm-hmm.
people who are yeah. knowledgeable about these things from a bird's eye lens and not on the small kind of examples that I've been giving.
Yeah.
Should yeah be able to know how to come up with things that satisfy this definition. And yeah, I don't know what I don't know, basically. I mean I kind of know, but not quite. So I feel like my takeaway from this is to yeah be okay with doing enough research and who our support, whether it's with money, time, and then yeah maybe just being more tuned in to maybe, I don't know if there's like a newsletter or a website I can find to just kind of get my yeah. finger on the pulse of
that's this a massive, really
nuanced topic.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but I feel as well as like that element of like burnout or like the gray spiral, like when you're aware of everything. I mean, you can never be aware of everything, but
mm-hmm.
I feel like the times when I've most been involved with environmental activism, which is definitely not right now, I just was like exhausted within a year.
Mm-hmm.
There's like just too much going on, like too much.
Yeah. So maybe, you know? Finding one thing, like for me, maybe it will be water. Is there like a right. local organization or another organization that I can support?
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have, I guess essentially I have reached that set it and forget it stage with Charity Water, is now like maybe I am like ready and have the headspace to find another thing.
Yeah.
And just maybe approach it that way. Just kind of one. Obviously I can't give away all my money to all the organizations. I don't know how much. I'm not like Bill Gates. So, or what's his name who just bought Twitter, who could have ended global hunger.
Elon Musk.
That article that came out, or like screenshots of him saying, yeah, show me how to end world hunger, I'll do it. And then he didn't. Anyway, before we get cut off, do you have like a thing, like one thing that you
do I have one thing?
Or how do you like, do you feel better about finding one thing or being the jack of all or Jill of all climate knowledge? I forget how you worded that in the beginning.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I think it's probably finding things that connected to other interests of mine already.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I think the human element, the climate justice for everyone is really important. And I think I gravitate towards stuff around food
because
mm-hmm. I like food.
Me too.
You know, so it's like, well, it's like a kind of just like an extension of other things that I'm already going to be interested in.
Mm.
Or, you know, I'm interested in education. That's what I work in. So, you know, there may be that link. So like kind of into maybe I'm not sure that I really do it, but I'm just, you know, thinking out loud, maybe integrating the climate justice elements into things that I'm already interested in for a wide range of reasons.
Okay.
So it's not like suddenly being like, oh, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something I'm not interested in, but like, you know, something like really random and being like, yeah, yes, this is going to be my thing, but actually being like, well, I don't know why I've chosen electric cars because I can't drive and I'm not interested in cars. Yeah. Like, you know, like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You start with what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like this could easily be a part two, whether it'll be this season or season two, to be determined, because we're planning on wrapping it up pretty soon to take a break for the summer. Let you know all the details. We'll do a recap episode. And because I feel we haven't wrapped up this topic very well. I don't think you can.
No.
Initial thoughts on, you know, that's kind of been the theme of the season, initial thoughts on various topics. So maybe like the idea for season two to come back to things more in depth I would like to talk more about like the kind of the burnout of like activism.
Mm-hmm.
How to avoid it when getting into it, when starting out. How do you kind of do it in a way that is manageable and sustainable for you?
All right. Do you have something hopeful to end with, Brandy? You know, just you put a nice quote in our notes.
Did I put? Oh yes. I think referenced this YouTuber Shel Bizzle a few times on the podcast, but she just recently changed her tagline to something short and sweet, and I think it's a good way to end it. Her new quote is, do your best and advocate for the rest. What that looks like for you is obviously dependent on you and what you feel is your best at any given moment, because that will change, fluctuate, and then advocate. What does that look like for you? Is it, you know, $10 a month to this charity, that charity? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, going to rallies? Is it talking to people in a community? So this, I feel like, will be a very resource heavy show notes.
Do check out the show notes, because we're going to put a bunch of
links
and resources, and as always, let us know what you think. You can send us voice notes on the website.
Yes, on the website, theteaonsustainableliving.com/contact, and then if you scroll to the bottom, you can sign up for our email newsletter to get the show notes in your inbox, and so you don't miss an episode.
For a mailing list.
Haven't been doing a very good job of promoting that. Trying to get into more of a habit of posting on social media, but now I need to get into the habit of showing up on stories. That could be a thing to revisit over the summer, how to do that
better. All right.
So we are down to less than a minute before Zoom is going to kick us off.
All right.
Oh, thank you for listening. Give a shitter. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
So bad.
It's so good.
It's so bad. It's just so bad.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Tea on Sustainable Living podcast.
If you made it to the end, we can only assume that you've enjoyed this episode.
Please consider sharing this with a friend or family member who could use some support on their sustainability journey.
And find us on Instagram at the Tea on Sustainable Living, and let us know what you liked about the episode.
All right, give a shitters. See you later. Get it? See you later? As in, see you later? So funny.
Why?